This has been today's Concert Billboard. Tune in each day to find out when your favorite performers are appearing in the WUSB broadcast area. The online version of Concert Billboard can be found at WUSB.fm and has an upcoming schedule months ahead so you know what to look forward to. You can also find the WUSB Concert Billboard group on Facebook. Concert Billboard is a service of WUSB 90.1 FM. Thank you for listening and have a happy and safe 2012.
And you're listening to radio station WUSB Stony Brook. The time is 6 o'clock. Time once again for Off the Wall. Good evening, everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you, joined tonight by Kyle from Seattle.
Hi there.
Hi. I'm not sure you're coming over the board. I think you are. Say something else?
No.
Yeah, okay. You're coming over fine. Tonight is the first of a two-part show on our trip in August, I believe, to the country of Belarus. Remember that, Kyle?
Yes, I remember Belarus. Quite an interesting adventure, as I recall.
You know, we talk a lot about the pleasantries and about how smoothly things go sometimes. Well, Belarus was kind of the exception to that. Belarus was where things didn't go so smoothly, where there was a lot of hassle, where there was a lot of anxiety, on our part mostly. I'm glad we went, but it was kind of rough, don't you think?
Yeah, it's a bit of a culture shock. I mean, things appear normal or a bit like you would expect maybe Eastern Europe to be, but you realize that they're a bit more isolated than they appear to be, isolated from your culture, from your perspective as an American or Westerner in general. So it was kind of the amalgamation of the little disruptions, the small discomforts that made a real pearl out of that journey.
It really did. I'm very glad you were there because I got sick. It was awful. It's second only to getting sick in Las Vegas because nobody really cares in either place. Having to deal with bureaucracy and just the drudgery of everyday life can really take a toll on you. And also, I should point out, for those of you unfamiliar, Belarus is known unofficially as Europe's last dictatorship. And they sought to prove that, actually, at the end of 2011 by passing a new law that imposes restrictions on visiting foreign websites by Belarusian citizens and residents. Under this new law, the violation of these rules is recognized as a misdemeanor and is punished by fines of varied amounts up to the equivalent of $125, which is a hell of a lot of money for them.
Are you kidding
me? I'm not kidding. This is all over the internet today, in fact. Additionally...
Are you saying that the citizens there, they themselves cannot... It's basically like they'd be committing a crime, like jaywalking or something, right?
Well, pretty much. Worse than jaywalking. Sort of like Jay smashing a windshield, maybe. But anyway, additionally, the law states that the owners and administrators of internet cafes or other places that offer access to the internet might be found guilty of violating this law and fined, and their businesses might be closed if users of internet services provided by these places are found visiting websites located outside of Belarus, and if such behavior of the clients was not properly identified, recorded, and reported to the authorities. The law states that this provision may apply to private individuals if they allow other persons to use their home computers for browsing the internet. Yeah. So that's Belarus, folks. That's what that's where we went. That's why we sound a little stressed. And Kyle, I wish we had more time to talk live, but maybe next week when we do the second part of this, we'll have more time. We're going to start this particular segment when we were leaving Belarus. We're at the train station. We're sitting in front of our, well, not in front of our train, but next to our train because it hasn't yet opened its doors. And we're kind of nervous because we don't know if we're supposed to be talking with a microphone on the train station platform. I'm feeling sick. We just want to get out of this country. And eventually we wind up on the train. We have a really interesting discussion about the various challenges of daily life in Belarus. So, are you ready for this?
Oh, I'm absolutely ready. It was interesting. Just I think we're most open or speaking most freely on our way out.
Yes,
we knew we were on our way leaving. You know,
you will see a definite change in tone when we're safely on the train heading out of the country than when we were sitting in the train platform. All right, Kyle, we're gonna go to the tape now, and we'll speak with you again soon, hopefully.
Perhaps.
And here we are in Belarus.
You want to check the levels real quick?
Yeah, check the levels. All right. So anyway, no, go ahead, you speak first.
No, you speak first.
I insist you speak first. Wait,
is
it loud enough? I guess it's loud enough.
Yeah, I think it is.
So, do you remember where we left things in, we were in Poland, right?
Yeah.
So we were talking about Germany.
Yeah.
And, I'm not even sure we can be heard right now because of the lady here.
Yeah.
And, I guess anything besides yeah?
No.
Alright. Fair enough. We're actually in Minsk
Belarus?
Belarus, thank you. I'm a little out of it. I've been sick, miserable. I don't really like this place.
I think you could just say that.
Well, I can speak English, but maybe people understand some things here. But right now we're waiting for the train. Actually, we're sitting in front of the train. I think it's already here. It leaves in an hour.
Right.
And it goes to Ukraine.
Right.
You really aren't saying anything. The monosyllabic sounds. Okay. We shouldn't worry about having a recording device here on the train station. Although, we can worry about that, I suppose, but I haven't really seen any overt attempts to control what we do or say. We should resume our story from last time, which I kind of forget where we are. We've heard about Germany, I think, but this is more fresh in our minds right now.
Yeah, we were talking about volunteerism and getting together and all of that, and then traveling out and getting into a place like this. I think the next thing was the train ride and the bogies being changed, which was pretty impressive. We were actually able to get off the train and photograph a little bit. And
bogies being changed. What's that?
It's the wheels, because the gauge of the track changes. It was a Soviet era security measure, so that invaders wouldn't be able to use the rail. And so, in order for a train to get into Belarus, you have to change the bogies, and it's a process where the trains are put into a shop and they're lifted up on huge jacks, and the old bogies are pushed out, and the new bogies are wheeled in and reattached. There's all this disassembly and reassembly. Even the coupling things that connect the two trains, they have to be changed. And there's all these workers and all this stuff going on. And they just let you out of the train. I mean, we were able to walk around in their shop, which really isn't done. I mean, even an auto mechanic really kind of gets nervous if a customer is walking around where he's working. So it was pretty impressive and unprecedented for us to be able to view what they were doing.
It was like an hour and a half or something.
Yeah, it was quite a while.
Walking around the garage there with all kinds of trains, train cars being lifted up and the wheels replaced.
And we had an interesting cabin mate, too. He's an older guy. And
God,
he had all kinds of stories and was telling the entire history of the Soviet Union and how Belarus came about. And we were entertained to a degree, but it was a bit cramped. It was a very narrow aisleway to get between. Very narrow aisleway to get in between any of the cars or any of the passageways. The doors were often very old or heavy or didn't work, so you'd have to literally like pry open a door to get from one train to another. And we were approached by these women when we got to the track too. There's all this food and concessions that are sold, and they jump onto the train, and you're basically hit with a barrage of these ladies, and you're sort of captive because then you're going in and getting the bogies changed, and they were in there too, selling their wares. Yeah, they're everywhere. And
what happens is when you come to train stations on these long train rides,
Basically, the only way to get food is to get them from people on the platforms, and these babushkas, they call them, like middle-aged elderly housewives with baskets and hairnets and things like that, have all this this stuff that they bought in stores, and they jack up the price quite a bit. I think it's like four times the price sometimes. But it's still really cheap by our standards. And you give them money, they hand you things through the train window usually. But in this case, since the train was stopped for a couple of hours, they came on board. They were visiting with people, and you were buying all kinds of things from them. We bought beer.
They don't want to stop selling, too. I mean, they have so much stuff. You buy one thing, they want to sell you another thing, and then another
back,
thing,
yes.
And then, oh, let me tell you about this.
And always what you have on you is exactly what it costs.
Right.
So you don't get any change.
Right.
But yeah, like you said, when we were in the garage watching the cars being lifted up, there they were there, too, selling to the mechanics, to us again, to all kinds of people.
Yeah.
And it's just like there was like a swarm of them just sort of maneuvering their way around every possible place they could go.
And running. They would jump on and off and run very quickly.
They could smell a customer at a mile away.
Yes, yes. And we marveled at this, and we even participated a little bit. So it was a different experience, but quite fun. The border was interesting, too. We had some changes and some two different... We had an exit Poland, and that was a standard sort of customs deal. And then entering into Belarus, we had to do a bit of the same kind of paperwork and presenting your passport. Something that we've talked about before, similar procedures as before that we experienced in the former Yugoslavia. And that basically was all the same, except... One of our forms, which is a bit unique, was not filled out beforehand. We had failed to do that, and we got berated immediately for not having filled it out.
Oh, my God.
And we had
berated.
No pens. We were scrambling to
do it. Felt like idiots. But the first thing that happened to us, we got into Belarus, we got screamed at by this, I don't know what she was. Well, I know what she was, but I don't want to say that on the air. But, I mean, what her title here was. She was part of the train or part of the customs, I'm not sure, but...
She was working with the people that were in the cabin. So I think the alarm was expressed by everyone because they were basically confident that it would slow things down and inhibit the process. So,
mostly we weren't following their little bureaucratic rules, and that means filling out this microscopic form.
It's a tiny form,
and it's got the stuff stamped over it, so you can't even read what you write because they have a stamp over it.
Exactly, parts of it are obscured. And, you know, you're getting carpal tunnel from just, scribing these tiny little letters and whatnot. So that was interesting. It was a fun little adventure just getting through that. And then we were able to do the bogies. That was after we had completed the customs stuff.
First thing, you went to Polish customs and got cleared to leave the country. Then Belarus. I thought Belarus would take longer, actually, but we got in... pretty easily. Of course, you have to have the full-page visa that you've already applied for.
And the guy that we were sitting with said that it had been a bit better. They were democratic in letting people in, whatever that means. But it did seem very fluid, and they were going through the motions, but not giving any sort of extra scrutiny, or it wasn't any worse than maybe Serbia or some of the other places we went to.
Well, other than taking 3 hours, but of course that was because of the bogies that they had to change on the train car. I think there's some food for our train. They're delivering all kinds of beverages and food and things like that.
Yeah.
Oh, you know what they're doing? They're delivering to every car. Every car has its own supply.
Right. The conductors, each train has its own conductor, and they're basically your...
Train car, you mean?
Yeah, I mean wagon has a conductor, and they're responsible for you, and they really do take care of you. You know, bring you tea and handle all of your paperwork. They'll take your passport and negotiate with the customs. They keep it in good order and make sure everything's working for you.
Yeah.
Now you're saying yeah.
Well, no, we're a little nervous at the train station and recording something, especially with soldiers walking by, and we don't know exactly how it's received to do this.
You know, and that really colors coming into this country and what it's been like sitting here. For a couple days or moving around, whatever. It's been peppered with that kind of fear, and a lot of it is just our own imaginations running wild, I believe.
And you know, we've seen a couple little instances of it, and of course a lot of symbolism, but direct contact and trouble for us has not been really apparent at all. But we do see a lot of posters and signage, a lot of young new recruits, and a lot of older veterans walking around, and many different types of police, whether it's for the train or whether it's just security or regular city police, and as well as cadets. There's these teams of cadets that ride around in vans in full fatigues and basically are in charge of things that are serious. They seem like they're an extension of the police or in cooperation with them. So, but altogether, it's a beautiful city and clean as all get out. It's really an enjoyable place to walk around. It's beautiful.
Oh boy. So okay, we're on the train now. We're still at Minsk station, preparing to go to Kiev in Ukraine, and no longer sounding as nervous as we were on the train station because we don't have soldiers and policemen and curious onlookers passing by every couple of seconds, and we're not even sure if we're supposed to be recording at all or if we're going to get turned into the secret police or whatever. So
it's a bit silly.
Instead we're on a bug train car where we have to worry about what we say.
But. Right. But hopefully our recording is the only bug going on. But it's sort of silly, though. You tend to take it on, you know, what you think is possible, and you really don't want to make anyone angry, not in a place where you don't understand the language, and you have all these misunderstandings and confusing situations to begin with.
But we didn't make anybody angry. They made themselves angry. A lot of angry people around. Everyone always seems pissed off at one thing or another, and you're always getting shouted at and you know, spoken down to. And after a while, you just sort of tune it out because there's nothing else you can do.
Yeah, you get used to them not being happy with the way you're doing what they want you to do. And the confusion, you just sort of expect it. You anticipate you'll get it wrong, and they'll be upset over the order that you did things or the way that you did things. And, you know, that's one thing, but then the other thing is the sort of brusque and terse way people are just when they don't know you.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not that there's blasé indifference here. It's that people are very pushy and sort of out for themselves.
Yes.
I mean, there's maybe...
Let's say you're standing in a line. Somebody will just breeze on in ahead of you.
Right.
And like you don't exist.
Right.
And if I really, you're just going to just walk in front of somebody like that and just completely dismiss the person who's been waiting patiently. You have to be rude, you have to push, you have to stare, you have to do all these things that we're just not used to doing.
Yeah, I mean, we're very polite and politically correct in comparison, but it's a cultural thing. And it's very hard to not make it mean anything, but I think the best way to play the game is to respond and to try doing it their way a little.
Yeah, we do.
We were in some lines, some funny lines, ticket counters and fast food restaurants and different places.
Okay, let's talk about it. First of all, our train is being hitched to a wagon, to a locomotive right now, so we might hear some funny noises, and we're moving back and forth a little bit. And hopefully nobody's trying to get into our cabin. We're in a cabin, our own cabin. I think we won't have anybody bothering us, unlike the Russian guy bothering us the whole trip from Warsaw to Minsk. Yeah, is somebody trying to get in?
I don't know, they're scratching at the door. I think we were writing our own horror movie just by being so afraid constantly.
I just want some time not being, I don't know, pestered or told to fill out forums or whatever, you know, it's just, it really is kind of nutsy. But okay, so, fast food line. Yesterday we were walking around, and I was already sick at that point, and I just wanted to have something sort of like comfort food. And some French fries from McDonald's sounded fine. I was kind of surprised they had a McDonald's. They actually have two that we could find in the city. So I figured that might, you know, be something that would just make it feel a little bit better, that and a cup of tea.
Yeah, but E, did you have any idea how popular it is?
Well, I was surprised by how mobbed the place was. But after going to other places with their way too big space and very dim lights and not very good food and long waits and bureaucracy, I can see why something like McDonald's would seem almost like paradise, because it's just filled with life.
This
and
island of happiness and serving you, and yeah, absolutely.
But then again, you know, when we were trying to just get a table, it was so competitive. I could not compete with the people there. You see an opening, and right away, somebody would be on it, or they'd be talking to somebody, a friend of theirs, and they'd already have that person telling them when the next place was going to be open, and you never had a chance to get there. Even if it was right next to you, it was gone in half a second. But
and I went inside,
mm-hmm.
and I placed the order, and you were attempting to get a seat outside the entire time I was inside. And let me tell you, the scene inside was as chaotic. The tables and dining room was very, very full, and the order counter was a mob scene. I mean, there must have been 20 people, 30 people, all crowded around. No distinct lines, just this mob of people sort of in a line, one big blob of a line. and I just jumped in, and I took a couple photos. I was just remarking at this. I just jaw drop. I can't even describe it. It was pretty insane. You know, kids everywhere, you know, wanting to order what they want, and parents, and it's just an absolute zoo.
How many people behind the counter?
So there was, you know, the staff and everything, but there were at least, you know, half a dozen people physically taking orders, and as many directly behind them shuffling burgers around and going to the drive-through or the walk-up, and then, you know, everybody in the back doing the cooking. So it was just a frenzy of activity. And I actually wrote down what I wanted to try to speed things up, and I actually got to someone that spoke a little bit of English. So ordering what we wanted, which was a set of fries and some tea, was really relatively easy. But and then I got it for here, or, you know, so it was on a tray, and I was, you know, lifting my tray and sort of lifting it over all the people to get out and around back to you, and you were still there trying to find a table, and that really blew me away. I was sure that you were sitting down and found a good spot and everything, and that was really,
in a way, it was lucky that I didn't, because if I had sat down, other people would have sat down with me, and I wouldn't have had anything to say about it, because you can't just take a table for one person. You know, there are four seats, so other people just would have taken over, and I don't know what we would have done then. But luckily, as soon as you came out, there was an opening that I was able to get to, and I think it was 25 minutes or so. In that period of time, there had not been a single opening, so we were extremely fortunate to actually
And you ran. You, like, jumped over a chair and ran.
I did.
Yeah.
I was sick, but I still did that,
yeah.
And it mattered. And, yeah, so we had our French fries and our tea, and it was good.
Yeah.
And we just would watch the world go by, I guess.
Yeah, it was quite pleasant, actually, to just sit there and enjoy some tea. This is what it is like here in Belarus. These even in a foreign establishment, a fast food place, there's still that frenzy, that chaos, and sort of lack of sort of indifference for what everybody else is doing. Everybody's very fixated on getting what they need.
Yes,
it's like a grasping at everything. Any moment is just constantly reaching for something. Because
yeah, even things like holding doors open for people, it's not done. And if you
really
do that for somebody, they're not going to thank you.
Yeah, and it's, yeah, they won't thank you. They might not even look at you.
Mm-hmm.
And if they do make any of those gestures, it's sort of a half gesture, sort of like, oh, I tried, but yeah, and they're gone. it's really not that heartfelt.
You saw that. You saw that lady do that to you earlier today, didn't you?
And oh, yeah, when she held the door.
She held the door for just
kind
enough time for it to slam into your face.
Right, like, oh, yeah, I tried. You can't say I didn't, but you're too slow, kind of. Yeah.
In a way, I kind of like doing that, but, you know, when it's the norm and no one's really looking out for anybody else, yeah, that kind of,
so
kinda, yeah, gets
there was
me.
This other incident. We're on a train now.
Oh, yeah.
And we went to the train station several times to sort of scope out and get our sense, because a lot of the language is in Cyrillic. It's very hard to...
Hang on.
So we had scoped out the...
okay. False alarm. We thought somebody was breaking into our cabin, but they aren't. Not now, anyway.
Yeah. So, we scoped out the train station a couple times. We tried to get our sense of it, because everything is in Cyrillic, and to just decipher even a Latin word and then get the equivalent in Cyrillic, even if it's spelled in the same way, the Cyrillic is much different, and it's really hard to match up unless you have any sort of understanding of the characters. And I'd say between the two of us, we understand maybe da and nyit, but that's it.
There's two different Cyrillics too. There's Belarus, there's Russian. They're slightly different. And we want to go to Kiev. Kiev might be spelled K-I-E-V, or it might be spelled K-Y-E-V, or different ways, even without Cyrillic. So it's it really gets confusing. But I always find the best rule when you go to a new place is to scope out the train station, learn where things are, and figure out what you want to do, when you want to get out of there, what train you want to be on, and where you buy the ticket and things like that.
Do a test train on the board. We did that.
Do a test train. Make sure you can find a train when one is announced. Otherwise, you're going to be scrambling like crazy and losing your mind the day that you're leaving.
So what I would see is much in the same way. There weren't very long lines. When we were in Warsaw, there were very, very long lines, and we were in the wrong line, and then we had gotten into the domestic, and then we had to switch to the international line. So there were not long lines, but people would come up beside you. If you were talking to a teller, a ticket agent at the cash desk, they would sit beside you until the transaction was done and then move and speak with the attendant. And that was normal. And it was a bit weird because these people are like basically looking over you, handing credit cards and doing all this transaction stuff. And they're sort of impatient, or they're just, you know, waiting till the very second that you tear yourself away so that they can nudge right in there. And there's not that much of a line. And so I got in on this. The third trip, the trip we were actually confident about making our order, and in fact that order did have to get corrected, which we'll get into, but for the initial purchase of these tickets that we then replaced, I was right up beside this guy who had cut in front of us, and I basically lost it and did exactly what he did, and he was starting to do this, like, you know, bobbing his head from side to side, like, and making big sighs, like, you know, like he had realized that I was giving him exactly the treatment that he had given us.
Right.
Or basically, he was getting this as his due for cutting, which there's no sense of that here either.
Mm-hmm.
People will go right in front of you. Even if you're standing a respectable distance, that respectable distance clearly states you're not interested in going to the counter. There's no sense of it being polite or anything like that. It's, you're not in line, I'm at the counter waiting for the person who's being helped to move.
Right.
And that was very interesting. So I dove right in and did it. And it would actually, it was completely normal. Yeah, maybe he was sighing. I don't know. Maybe he was just trying to express that he was tired and he worked hard, and that's why he cut in front of me. I don't know if he even registered it, but it was totally doable, and he didn't really, I don't think, feel it was out of the ordinary, because, again, I'd been seeing everybody else do this. He had done something I would consider slightly ruder, which was, you know, going in front of someone. So I just did the whole, you know, hovering over the transaction thing, and then we were able to get helped. But that actually turned into a bit of a trick.
Well, let me just intercede with something here, because this wasn't the first time we had gone there. We went the day before hoping we could get the tickets then. We were trying to get tickets to Kiev, and we actually wound up not waiting on a very long line, speaking to a person behind a glass, and saying that we wanted to go to Kiev and trying to figure out when the trains were, and we found out that there was a night train, and we actually were considering buying the ticket then, but she wanted our passports. And the thing is, so did our hotel. Our hotel took our passports.
Yes.
And that's part of the bureaucracy, too. They take your passports, they hold on to them. So, okay, how do we give you our passports when the hotel has our passports? There was nothing we could do. So we had to go back to the hotel and say, hotel, can you make this arrangement for us? And they were like, no, here, take your passports. You must go pick your passports. Thanks for letting us know that, you know, before we needed to actually use them. So we had to go back the next day, and that's when what you're describing happened after going through it another time.
And that's just one example. I thought she originally wanted just the passport number. No.
They want
the entire passport.
Yeah.
And, of course, the hotel's helpless, so we had to say, hey, give us our passport. And then they wanted you to, you know, settle up because he's taking the passport.
Yeah,
and all
I had to pay the whole bill on the spot. But the woman behind the desk, we got the same one, and she remembered us.
Yeah, she smiled when we showed up with our passports.
Actually got a smile from somebody here. It's amazing. But apparently just us asking for tickets to Kiev was enough for her to remember us. But if she remembered us then, boy, she's never going to forget us after what we did this time.
Absolutely. And, you know, they're few and far between, but you can get a bit of a smile or some nice gestures. And it goes a long way when you're dealing with people, even if they don't return it. I kept doing it because I felt at some point someone would smile back, someone would get the idea that I was a friendly person, and actually I'm glad that in spite of everything, I continued to do that because there were a couple instances where, you know, just a little gesture and something like that, you'd get somebody's personality or you'd get that they're friendly as well. And so, but the thing is, the overwhelming amount of it is so terse, so cold, that it's very hard. It would be wrong to glow about the good things without really getting into the attitude.
Yeah.
Because it's so apparent and this entire culture is soaked in it, and it's really, really hard to escape and tough to acclimate to.
I don't think I met a single nice cashier the whole time I was here. I think they were all molded from the same type of bitchy attitude that is in my worst nightmares, where you just get yelled at for various reasons or not given any kind of pleasantry whatsoever. I mean, yeah, I'm not into big fake pleasantries or anything like that, but, you know, glaring and being pissed off at the world, I mean, why bother then? You know, why live a life that you're so miserable with? Why not make some changes? But it just seems like that's the norm. That's how people behave because that's the only thing they know how to act like.
Right, it's like they have their respect, you know. And they have their territory, and so they can be as angry and you know, full of vitriol as they want, and it's okay because that's their domain, and they can just, you know, barrel through and thrash about, you know, treading on everyone like they're worthless kind of thing. But you're talking absolutely, I mean, definitely the truth. People that work, you know, in grocery stores or at a restaurant who's running a cash register, those kinds of people, they just seem to get carried away with their perceived authority, which is rather silly.
All right, so we're buying the tickets.
Yes. So we're buying these tickets for the final time. What we thought we'd figured it all out, and I wrote it down on a piece of paper. I wanted to be very clear, and I wrote the times and everything, and she seemed like she knew or remembered us, had our passports to present to her, and so I was confident we were going to get the right ticket. She's looking it up, and then she printed them out, and you thought we should verify this, and that's actually pretty wise because we stepped aside and found out.
Well, I mean, we had discovered there was a morning train. We wanted to take the morning train. Didn't want to take the overnight train, so we wrote down a piece of paper, Kiev, this time. And yeah, I checked after she gave us a ticket, and there's no way to check before paying for it. They took credit card and all that, signed the credit card. After signing it, that's when they give you the ticket. That's when you look, and you discover that it's actually the nighttime train that she gave us tickets for. And, you know, it's hard enough getting tickets in a train station here. How in God's name do you return tickets and exchange them for something else? I've never been down that road.
And she spoke no English at all.
Not at all.
And was happy to just go on and on and on in Russian. What language would it be? I mean,
Russian or
Belarusian.
Either one.
Whatever it was, I mean, she just blatantly knows that we don't speak the language and just continues on and on and on and on and on.
Yeah.
throughout the whole transaction, there's no way to say, hey, could I verify this ticket? I want to be sure, and anything like that. So we're looking at this, you're saying, no, this is wrong.
But we wrote it down on a piece of paper, which she, by the way, took. She took the piece of paper, so we had no evidence after that we had written this down. But she gave us at the wrong time. It was her mistake, no question about that.
So we didn't go back to her. We were actually standing in front of another...
We were afraid. We were afraid to go back to her.
Cash desk. Yeah, we were a bit afraid. We were standing in front of another cash desk as we were looking at this, and then we started actually interacting with that person and saying, trying to describe that these were wrong, and she had sort of a supervisor that came across and was English-speaking to some degree.
She found somebody who spoke some English, and that was a big deal.
Yeah. And so was sort of trying to interpret what we were saying. And I basically, I pointed to the tickets, and I did the whole, like, you know, like, cut, you know, across the neck, like, this is wrong, and that's when she got the other lady, which was actually a really good way to explain it.
We started moving.
I think we've left me.
Is it 11:31? Let's see. Yes, it's exactly 11:31, so we're leaving on time, and goodbye to Minsk, and good riddance for now. I've been here three times, but, you know...
Third time's a charm, right?
Yeah, it seemed like they really were trying to try my patience this time. Shall we describe what we see as we leave?
Well, we're on the first track, on the first platform of the main station, which is huge and really beautiful in some ways. A lot of stone and marble, tinted bronze tints on the windows. Biggie Smalls would be proud. Cold breath, as if I want. Anyway, lots of architecture. It's nice out. It was raining for a couple days, but it's actually partly cloudy with some blue sky and a little bit of sunshine. There's a lot of construction, a lot of refurbishing. I saw people tearing up stairs this morning as we were leaving, and it was a stairwell that hadn't been worked on when we arrived.
In our hotel.
Like two buildings down.
Okay.
This looks like a new extension, this building, maybe for offices. Quite new.
Now, for all intents and purposes, Belarus is still part of the Soviet Union. They never really got rid of the values, the government, anything like that. Russia has since moved on. Belarus is pretty much as it was back in the 80s and before that. So it's an interesting place to go to. But, you know, as you mentioned, influx of various Western culture and a lively youth, which I think will make a bit of a difference in the future.
I really felt the young people had a grip on some change and what they want, being distinct from the way things are done. And I even would argue that some of those cashiers, some of those people working those jobs, maybe that's, I hope that's where some of that frustration comes from, is that they're working this job and they're in this system and they know something else is out there for them.
I mean, any moment now our door is going to be flung open and we ask to present our tickets, I'm sure of that, but it's okay. We can continue discussing things until then.
Yes, I can't wait. I'm really, really looking forward to it.
And as we see the city of Minsk pass before us, with its wide streets, sparse amounts of people walking down them.
You felt there were slightly more people this time, though?
No, to me it felt like there were less.
Less.
Yeah, it felt like there were less people. Or maybe I just went to places where there weren't as many people.
Right,
But this didn't seem like there was a whole... We were there on the weekend, and it didn't seem like there was a whole lot of activity.
Yeah.
It is in August, though, so maybe people are away
holiday.
In other places. I don't know.
Yeah, they're on holiday. Storage lockers with tin roofs.
Yeah, it looks that way.
Yeah, like people keep their cars in these storage facilities.
Look at the antennas on top of these apartment buildings. Those are regular, like, aerial antennas, are they?
Yeah. A lot of long wire antennas or power stretching between buildings. So
yeah, you don't see satellite dishes on people's residences.
No, not a lot of satellite. Yeah, that's an interesting point.
Anyway, to get back to the ticket fiasco. Okay, so there we were, talking to somebody behind the glass window, saying we had the wrong tickets. They found somebody who spoke some English.
And she starts telling us, she writes down the number 39,000 rubles.
Yeah, and that's another thing.
Money. Belarusian money.
The rubles here have very devalued, so things cost hundreds of thousands of rubles, and it gets kind of silly sometimes. So yeah, she's telling us we need to cough up 39,000 rubles, and she wouldn't take the credit card. She only took cash, and I...
Money, Belarusian money.
Yeah, and I understood the concept of Belarusian money, but I didn't understand how...
Money!
Yeah, okay, shut up. I didn't understand how it was possible that the window next to it would take a credit card. In fact, this window even said they took credit cards, but they wanted cash for this. And number two, why are they asking me for money when I'm getting something that I thought would cost less because it's not an overnight train, no sleeper.
And we had just bought it. It was a mistake. How do you communicate that when you don't know how to communicate? And
when they don't know how that they can even make mistakes, it's impossible for them to actually make a mistake. I think that's true of all train people everywhere, that they don't make mistakes. We learned that in Norway.
Yeah.
In this case, yeah, it was like, our righteous indignation at being asked to pay for their mistake was matched only by the fact that we didn't have 39,000 rubles on us in cash.
At all.
Yeah, so there was nothing we could do. And at one point, you called our hotel so that we could ask them, hey, can you guys help us? You speak English, and you can talk to these people. And they weren't having it, were they?
They were trying to get their brain around what happened. And again, they didn't really know where to even start. And it was kind of hard. Then you were passed the phone.
They passed the phone underneath the glass window. It was, yeah. Because it's so bizarre. All of a sudden, I'm having this phone passed to me, a long cord. And keep in mind, there's people standing right behind you, as you described, leaning up next to the glass. I didn't
huffing
care.
And puffing.
Did not
and
care at that
stopping.
Point. At that point, I was being introduced to Belarusia, and I was becoming an honorary citizen by being as rude as possible and not even looking at them. But anyway, so this phone gets passed to me underneath the glass window. And on the other end of it was this woman named Valentina, who spoke really good English, and was explaining to me why I had to pay this amount to make the change of the ticket. And basically, I was a polite conversation, but I was kind of firm in asking, well, why are we paying for something when it wasn't, our mistake? We asked for this. We wrote down this. I'd say it several times. I don't think it got through the first time. But I said we wrote down the train we wanted, and she gave us a different train, and we just want the train we wanted. And she asked me to hand the phone back to the person behind the glass. And I thought pretty much there was no way out at that point, and we were going to have to find the money. And keep in mind, this money wasn't that much. We just didn't have it, but we'd have to get it.
It was about $7.
Yeah, something like that. It's just the point of the thing. But anyway, they had like a 5-minute conversation back and forth on the phone behind the glass. And then the phone got slipped underneath the glass to me again. And I said hello, and Valentina said, okay, it's all fixed. You don't have to pay anything. In fact, you'll even get money back. And it was because there was a program error in the computer. I didn't understand any of that, how there could be a program error that would result in that. And also, the amount of money they gave us back was exactly the same amount of money that they were asking us to give them. So I don't understand how that could even be possible. If you're asking someone for a particular amount of money, and then all of a sudden you realize that they don't owe you that, you owe them the exact same amount. Just really looks weird.
They probably won because the difference is probably even greater for the tickets.
I don't know. I think we wound up probably with the same kind of seats, which is our own little cabin here, which is exactly what I wanted.
Yeah, it's actually really pleasant.
Yeah.
No one is in here yet.
Nobody in here smoking or, snoring or smelling or whatever it else is.
Eating their sandwiches and making their bed and talking about the Soviet and Reagan and the CIA.
When we got on the train in Poland, we thought we'd just have our own little seats, but we go in and there's a freshly slept in bed. And bags all over the place. And where are our seats? Well,
yes.
Yes.
Gostanstvo.
English.
Kiev. Passport.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Passport. Yes.
Passport.
State.
United States. USA. Yes.
Граждане Соединенных Штатов, да?
Да.
America. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Not sure what we think of that. Thanks for reminding us that we're Americans. Don't forget it. Was she listening in the whole time? See, that's...
Should we have shown her our visa?
I tried to show her my visa, but...
Yeah.
You know, maybe she was asking us if we wanted something, like a snack, because we're in first class after all.
From America?
An American point to America saying that we get a special snack because we're... I don't know. I don't know what this is all about, and this is like typical of everything that's happening to us. I don't know what's going on, but... People just keep speaking to us in their language and expecting us to understand we don't.
I think we should make up something. I don't think a snack is good enough. I think she was talking about my last name and how it's Ukrainian,
but
from America.
She didn't even open your passport. She just looked at the front of it and pointed to America and said something. I mean, she looked at the... but when she was pointing, she was just pointing at the front for both of us.
Yeah. Huh.
And not in a, you know, a quizzical sort of a way. It's sort of an emphatic kind of a way.
I think it's like, you know, she's got her hands full. Not what she was expecting for this trip.
I feel we'll find out what it means at some point in the near future. So anyway, we're back at the train window. We've won. We get new tickets printed out. We have, 39,000 rubles in our hands now.
Yeah, you had some cash, and that was great, actually, because we were able to go and get some food and take care of ourselves and try to calm down a little bit.
Not sure how great that was, actually, that we got food, but we did the best we could.
Right.
I mean, food really is not much to write home about that we got anyway. But it was something. It was something.
Are you talking about the cafeteria?
Well, okay, let's talk about the cafeteria. I mean, I was talking about it in general. All the places we went to really weren't that great. But last night, I looked at a cow.
First
Belarusian cow I've seen.
Wow.
And I'm not going to make any jokes about fat women or anything like that. We wouldn't do that. That's beneath me. Yes, we went to a cafeteria last night. We didn't know it was a cafeteria. We thought it was a restaurant. We walked in, and all of a sudden we realized, hey, everybody's getting food on trays. All right, why not? Who cares? And we just basically started picking things. Because we had money to spend. We had like 100,000 rubles we wanted to get through, which is something like, I don't know, 25 bucks or something like that. We just wanted to spend it. We didn't like eat much the day before, so we wanted to actually have something, you know, that would hold us for a while. And you told the guy you wanted a pizza. He was making pizzas and stuff like that.
15 minutes.
He said.
Down 15 minutes.
We wrote down 15 minutes, and then we went and picked out other things, you know, basically just put them on our tray and went to the cashier.
There were little bits of again this craziness in there. I mean, the one pizza I picked wasn't available, but
of
I could take
not.
All
yeah.
the other ones.
Not the one you
or
wanted.
Or the soup. There was two soups, and the one that was full, no, we couldn't have that, but we could have the other soup. And
right.
It just made absolutely no sense. Maybe there was a same
soup. Yeah, he said, no, this soup's not, but it's there. It was full, and we couldn't have it. It was weird.
Right.
But no regrets. It was good soup that we had.
No, it was good. Yeah. I was thankful for the soup, and it was just... A bit bizarre, and you know, and then the lady that was running the register, she was very
high strung.
Yeah, and we actually got through and paid for things. She actually
no, you didn't get through because you tried.
Right.
You tried to get away with something.
I got silverware for you.
I sailed on through. I sailed on through without getting silverware. I always do this in cafeterias for some reason.
And I got a double set because I was getting it for you, and she freaked out.
Totally freaked out.
She was, and then explaining it, and then looked at me and shook her head like, okay, I'm going to have to charge you for it, and rang me up for my two sets of silverware. I tried to say, you know, I tried to, you know, flag you down. You were already sitting down munching your food, and I'm sitting there getting berated over two sets of silverware.
Did she charge you for the other silverware?
Oh, I think so. I think that's required.
Oh my God, I didn't know that. I thought you'd worked it out.
Yeah. Well. Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
I mean, come on. We almost got charged for a plastic knife in a grocery
yeah,
store.
Yeah. The night before, when we realized that the restaurant in our hotel was closed because of a wedding party, we couldn't get any food. We managed to get to a supermarket and just buy some random things. And, we realized we didn't have a knife to cut some of the stuff. Thank you. So we have bedding.
Yes.
Is that what she was asking us?
Tablecloth.
a tablecloth. I think it's bedding. We don't have a table, so why do we have tablecloth? It's warm, too.
Okay, bedding. Fine. Yep, bedding.
It's part of first class treatment.
Yeah.
But
what's next?
Yeah, so we didn't have a knife to cut the various meat and cheese that we had found in the supermarket. So next door was like a little deli, a little fast food deli, and we were just asking for a plastic knife. And
she took the knife,
mm-hmm.
walked over to the register, and rang me up for 100 rubles, which we calculated is 2 cents.
Again, the point of the thing, you know?
It's 2 cents.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I don't get charged for plastic knives. And, you know, so this brings me back to just getting through with the double set of silverware at the cafeteria. I paid for it and then took several napkins. I was confident that those were going to be free and she wouldn't charge me for those. But then we were trying to figure out the pizza because the pizza was
going
to take 15 minutes.
But you're getting ahead of yourself here because you went to get beer after we got food.
Oh, you're right.
Yeah. And boy, was that epic adventure.
I put my tray down and I go up and I'm going to order a couple beers. There's two girls there sitting at the bar. Like, going through the menu, taking forever and ever and ever, and they finally chose to get, like, a coffee or something, like, that had to be made by the espresso machine, and there were, you know, at least two pairs of guys that came up and got shots of tequila, and I was, you know, standing behind one other guy that wanted two beers and a plate of nuts, and then there was, you know, three people queued up behind me.
That were going to get in front of you if you weren't careful.
Yeah, if I wasn't careful. So
I saw you angling
to
make sure that didn't happen.
Yeah, I mean, I'm bouncing back and forth trying to, like, watch all angles because I know, you know, with one bartender and these obnoxious girls just sitting there and sitting there and sitting there and sitting there,
right.
Sweet time.
And the bartender apparently wasn't able to move past them to the next person while they were trying to make up their damn minds.
Right.
There were basically, like, 6 or 7 people online total. But each person seemed to take at least 5 minutes to get anything done.
Right. And it just went on and on and on. And I have, you know, hot soup that's sitting there and everything's, you know, getting cold. And I was just finally so worn down by it. I just was going to stay there. I wasn't going to go back. I at least 3 times considered just walking away and eating my food first and then coming back for some beer. No. When you're in Belarusia, you do as the Belarusians do. So I waited it out, and eventually got served. And the barmaid was very nice to me, and the beer that I wanted was not available because it was Russian, and they had it in bottles. And I said, "Well, no, we'd like some draft beer." So she indicated the two that I wanted, and then the one that I did choose was pouring very, very slowly. It might have been towards the end of the keg or something like that. So eventually I got the two beers, and I said, you're working very hard. I tried to compliment her, you know, because it's so busy. And she said, oh, this is normal. I was sort of thinking to myself, yeah, isn't it?
I think if she was working very hard, it wouldn't have taken 25 minutes to get two beers in a line of 6 people.
All right, but you know me. Kill them with kindness. I try to be nice as possible and see if I can get... And I got a smile out of her. She was sweet about it. And then, you know, I went back and ate, and I was just like, whew, just so blown away by the whole thing.
Well, by that time, though, the time for the pizza had passed. So
correct.
I figured I'd go and get that for you so you wouldn't have to go through who knows what else.
Right.
I got to the place where you had ordered the pizza, and there were 3 pizzas just sitting there. So basically, I picked the one that looked the most like the one in the picture because nobody there could be bothered to answer any of my questions. They were having a conversation amongst themselves. That's something we notice a lot, just people basically standing around talking to fellow workers and not really helping anybody around them. We saw that in our hotel, just had all these hotel workers like standing in the back, just like conversing, and I don't know what their job was. You had this weird, like, bars that duplicated themselves from one door to another, and just a lot of extra staff not really needed for what they were there for.
Also true in the metro, there's all these cafes or flower shops and delis and stuff. They're
and
all the same.
Let us not forget the drugstore,
What was that store we went into?
It was like a beauty store.
A beauty store.
Beauty supply store. I thought we could get some medicine.
Like a drugstore without the drugs, basically, in America.
Basically, yeah.
So, yeah, I had a headache at that point. I've been to a lot of ailments in this country, and nowhere else, just here. How far are we from the border?
Yeah.
I think I'll feel so much better. We went in there thinking maybe we could find some aspirin. And it was like walking into Rod Serling's Twilight Zone, because you walk in there and it's complete silence, and there's all these staff people. There's no customers, just staff people, and they're all staring at you. And every time you round the corner, there's somebody that's standing there staring straight ahead. Apparently, their job is to sell a particular product that nobody's buying, and that you don't really need help buying if you are buying it.
So if they had problems having products, now they're having problems with customers.
They must have had 8 different people in that store with no customers, and really they didn't need more than the cashier. And of course they didn't have what we were looking for in the first place.
So I hope the audience is getting the idea that there's a lot of these little instances. This is not just the stories about us and our food, and the real takeaway is how insane this is. And so, I mean, get back. You've got to tell this. So you get the pizza. I mean, this is the cafeteria, right?
I picked the pizza out because nobody could be bothered to talk to me. They were all, like, just standing around talking. So I said, okay, I'm going to take this one in the middle. I expected somebody to, like, bayonet me in the back because I took someone's pizza. But, you know, I took the one that I thought belonged to us.
Now, mind you, I had no way of telling the cashier that I had ordered a pizza. So I assumed...
We didn't know how that worked.
I'll come back, I'll get the pizza, and pay for it.
Right. So I walk up to the cashier... And I put the pizza down, and she just looks at me like I have 2 heads. And I'm like, well, what do I do now? And so she just, at the top of her lungs, hollers to the pizza guy something in Russian or Belarusian. And, you know, really loud, really angry, really obnoxious. And the poor guy, like, comes all the way over. And there's a whole big thing that gets started where they're yelling back at... Well, he's not yelling so much. He's pretty much taking the yelling. And she's, like, throwing her arms up, saying something to him. It's not directed at me, at least, but she's really angry, and I can't imagine what it is. And maybe she realizes that I didn't order a pizza myself. So I wave to you to stand up to, like, identify yourself as the pizza orderer, because maybe I violated some kind of protocol by actually taking a pizza without ordering one.
So I come over, and it's you and me, and I'm standing next to the guy who's actually made the pizza.
Yeah, he recognized
me,
right.
And I'm giving him a look like I know what you're going through, kind of, and he was speaking with her, and then just sort of let her finish and ring it up. As you know, once we were all there, we could all, you know, suss each other out and maybe put things together.
We could all tell our side of the story.
Right. And then, so she rings it up begrudgingly, and you know, rips your receipt and all of that.
Yeah, that's the code they have. They give you a receipt and they rip it, and that's some kind of code that tells them that you have a receipt, I guess.
Yeah,
they
begin to ripping the receipt.
Yeah.
As soon as it's done, they rip it and give it to you. So that it's not a forgery or I don't know what. So in any event, I look at him right before he walks away, and he just kind of smiled at me and raised his eyebrows a little, and I did the same. I just was sort of blown away, but again, those are the little moments.
Well, apparently what you were supposed to do was get a receipt from him.
Right.
And not have it ripped, maybe.
No. You're supposed to... have told the cashier that you've ordered a pizza, she puts it on your receipt, then you take your receipt back to him to claim your pizza.
Ah.
I have no way of doing that, so I figured, well, I'll do it the other way, which is wait for the pizza to be done, get the pizza, and pay for it, just like anything else. Everything else in that cafeteria, you take it and approach the cashier. But there's one thing, and that's the pizzas. You do not do that with no. You order it from the cashier, then verify with the pizza guy when it's ready.
We instantly find the one thing that's always the exception to the rule, whether it's the kind of soup that they have plenty of that we can't have, or the pizza that...
Or how to open a door, or the order of assembling the entrance to a metro, or...
And that was part one of the trip to Belarus with Kyle and myself. Next week we'll be complaining some more about the various things that go on in that country and the difficulty we have getting the basic things done. Kyle, you'll be there next week too, right?
Yes, I will. I plan it.
Okay, we've just been sitting here listening to the show the whole hour. It's been pretty awesome. Write to us, otw@2600.com. We'll see you next week. Good night.
Не спасти от совести, ты прости меня, прости. Не любить без ревности, не стоять под окнами мокрыми, не искать в телефоне любимую и не слышать гудки одинокие и не ждать, что помилует милая. Милая.
Информбюро на русском радио.